Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 20, the Dynasty of Puru, text number 38. No purport, we'll just do some reading here. Brihaspati said to Mamata, "You foolish woman, although this child was born from the wife of one man through the semen discharged by another, you should maintain him." Upon hearing this, Mamata replied, "O Brihaspati, you maintain him." After speaking this way, Brihaspati and Mamata both left. Thus the child was known as Bharadvaja. Although encouraged by the demigods to maintain the child, Mamata considered him useless because of his illicit birth, and therefore she left him. Consequently, the demigods known as the Maruts maintained the child. And when Maharaj Bharata was disappointed for want of a child, the child was given to him as his son. Purport. From this verse it is understood that those who are rejected from the higher planetary systems are given a chance to take birth in the most exalted families on this planet Earth. That's the end of Bhaktivedanta Purports of the 9th Canto, 20th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Dynasty of Puru. Now we have the dynasty of chapter 21, the dynasty of Bharata. I'll just read a little bit of it because most of the chapter is just one name after another, which I'm sure you're all excited to hear about. But the first part is about Ranti Devi, which is might be a little bit more interesting to us. The summary, the dynasty of Bharata. The 21st chapter describes the dynasty born from Maharaj Bharata, the son of Maharaj Dushmanta, and also describes the glories of Ranti Devi, Ajamida, and others. The son of Bharadvaja was Mayu, and Mayu's son was Brihataksha, Jaya, Mahavirya, Nara, and Garga. Of these five, Nara had a son named Sankriti, who had two sons named Guru and Ranti Dev. As an exalted devotee, Ranti Deva saw every living entity in relation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he completely engaged his mind, his words, and his very self in the service of the Supreme Lord and his devotees. Ranti Devi was so exalted that he would sometimes give away his own food in charity, and he and his family would fast. Once after Ranti Deva spent 48 days fasting, not even drinking, he was about to eat. A Brahmin guest appeared. Ranti Devi therefore did not eat the food, but instead immediately offered a portion of it to the Brahmana. When the Brahmana left and Ranti Devi was just about to eat the remnants of the food, a Shudra appeared. Ranti Devi therefore divided the remnants between the Shudra and himself. Again, when he was just about to eat the remnants of the food, another guest appeared. Ranti Devi therefore gave the rest of the food to the new guest, was about to content himself with drinking the water to quench his thirst. But this is also precluded. For a thirsty guest came and Ranti Dev gave him the water. This was all ordained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to glorify his devotee and show how tolerant a devotee is in rendering service to the Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being extremely pleased with Ranti Deva, entrusted him with very confidential service. The special power to render the most confidential service is entrusted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to a pure devotee, not to an ordinary devotee. Now here's a whole list of sons. Anyone who can memorize this whole list gets extra prasadam today. Good luck. So, text one. Sri Gaudiya Goswami said, because Bharadvaja was delivered by the Maru demigods, he was known as Vitata, The son of Vitata was Manyu, and from Manyu came five sons, Brihatshatra, Jaya, Mahavira, Nara, and Ganga. Of these five, the one known as Nara had a son named Sankriti, Amarj Prakshit. Descendant of Pandu, Sankriti had two sons named Guru and Rantideva. Rantideva is famous in both this world and the next, for he is glorified not only in human society, but also in the society of the demigods. Rantideva never endeavored to earn anything. He would enjoy whatever he got by the arrangement of providence. But when guests come, he would give them everything. Thus he underwent considerable suffering along with the members of his family. Indeed, he and his family members were shivering for want of food and water. Yet Rantideva always remained sober. Once after fasting for 48 days, in the morning, Rantideva received some water and some foodstuff made with milk and ghee. When he and his family were about to eat, a Brahmin guest arrived. Because Rantideva perceived the presence of the Supreme Godhead everywhere and every living entity, he received the guest with faith and respect and gave him a share of the food. The Brahmin guest ate his share and then went away. Purport. Rantideva perceived the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in every living being, but he never thought that because the Supreme Lord is present in every living being must be God. Nor did he distinguish between one living being and another. He perceived the presence of the Lord both in the Brahmana and in the Chandala. This is the true vision of equality, as confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 5.18. Vidyavanaya sampani brahmani gavi hastani shuni taiva swapake cha pandita samadarshanaha. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with an equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, outcast. A pandita, or a learned person, perceives the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in every living being. Therefore, although it has now become fashionable to give preference to the so-called Daridra Narayana, or poor Narayana, Rantideva had no reason to give preference to any one person. The idea that because Narayana is present in the heart of one who is a Daridra, or poor, the poor man should be called Daridra Narayan, poor Narayan, is a wrong conception. By such logic, because the Lord is present in the hearts of the dogs and hogs would also be Narayan. One should not mistakenly think that Rantideva subscribed to this view. Rather, he saw everyone as the part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hari Sambandhi Vastuna. It is not that everyone is the Supreme God. Such a theory, which is propounded by the Mayavada philosophy, is always misleading, and Rantideva would never have accepted it. The Bhagavad Gita gives us vision about what principles are behind spiritual advancement. And the Srimad Bhagavatam gives us practical examples of those who follow that vision and what their experience is. Either way, that experience is granted to us, not just simply by hearing, but by practicing. Now, when we hear about Rantideva fasting for 48 days and not even drinking, it's not exactly what we're going to follow today, luckily. But it's an inspiration of the direction that's possible, the attainment that's possible, if one actually comes under the spiritual energy, the internal energy of Krishna. For us, the idea of fasting for one day is quite daunting. To fast for 2 days is extremely troubling. To fast for a week is more or less, we'd have to be thrown into a dungeon in order to do that. But 48 days, it's almost, it would be our worst nightmare. But Rantideva, we cannot consider that when he was fasting, he was completely anxiety, thinking about when he's going to get his first Glubjaman again, samosa, even a little bit of sabji would be good. That he was meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in such ecstatic meditation, he was not even aware of the trouble that comes from the body through fasting. One cannot simply put himself into a difficult situation, torture the body, and expect to make spiritual advancement. In the hippie days, it was that let me fast myself into enlightenment. And usually such people who try to fast themselves into enlightenment, they fast themselves into the lower species of life. Because as Krishna says, one can restrain the senses and organs of action, but if his mind dwells on sense objects, he certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. On the other hand, he who engages the active organs and works the devotion without attachment is by far superior. So our aim is not to torture our body, but to utilize our body in Krishna's service. Therefore, if we eat yuktahara viharasya yukta chetasukaramasu, yoga bhavati dukaha, that the devotee doesn't eat too much or eat too little, just enough so that the body has the energy to perform service and that we can not overly tax the digestive system so that we get sick instead of actually getting energy. No, eat what's necessary so that the mind and the activities of the senses can be engaged in Krishna's service. And that the idea of renunciation is a gradual process. It happens naturally. The more one becomes under the internal energy, then the more one becomes enthusiastic to come more under the internal energy. And after some time, it'll be that the internal energy is so attractive that the material nature, the material activities seem insignificant. But when the material activities seem significant to us, we can't ignore them, otherwise we'll become more attached to them. It's like if we're fasting, we follow Nilgalakadasi, what has become tradition in ISKCON, of not drinking water even and fasting completely. Because I know one devotee said every Akadasi is Nilgalakadasi for him. Although he has 3 big feasts every Akadasi, he doesn't take a drop of water. Therefore, he claims he's following Nilgalakadasi. Jal means water, so he doesn't take a drop of water. But if one's mind is dwelling on sense objects, when one is fasting in such a way, not even taking water, not taking food, then one actually becomes more attached to the sense objects than normal. The mind becomes clearer, the attachment becomes stronger, and then what generally happens is that after the fast day, one eats 2 or 3 times more than normal. That one's meditation is simply fixed on the clock, and the heart becomes more enlivened with every tick of the second, drawing closer to the goal of life to break the fast. And indeed, if one fasts, then even the taste of the prasadam becomes more enjoyable. Therefore, one will become more attached to the food, more attached to eating, than if one didn't fast. So therefore, one should try, Ekadasi, for instance, is meant for fixing the mind upon Krishna, not for fixing it on fasting. Now, if one can fast, it should make it easier to fix the mind upon Krishna. But if by fasting one fixes mind upon the food, then that's not proper fasting. And if one can fast and fix one's mind upon Krishna and get a higher taste, then eating becomes less of an attachment, because one gets a higher taste. One can find out that actually the highest taste is in the holy name, is in associating with Srimati Radharani and Krishna through the chanting of the holy name offenselessly. And of the 11th offense is inattentiveness to chanting and maintaining material attachments. It's only because we think that there is something more enjoyable than Krishna consciousness that we don't enjoy Krishna consciousness, because we take other things as being more significant than Krishna. Although we hear Krishna is the source of everything, still we take things as being more significant than Krishna is, and therefore when things enter into our mind, we pay attention to them, and we forget about Krishna, because we think they're more significant. But someone like Ranti Devi is an example of someone who is merged in transcendence, and therefore eating, sleeping, mating, defending did not bother him at all. They were taken as inconsequential. Therefore Krishna says, Vyas parsheva saktatma vindat detmini yat sukham sabrahma yoga yuktatma sukham akshayam ashnute, that a person who is not attracted to sense objects or external objects, such a yogi, is not attracted to sense gratification or external objects, but always entranced, meditating within. In this way, one enjoys unlimited happiness because one concentrates on the Supreme. So this is a promise to us. We may not be concentrating on the Supreme, and when we chant Hare Krishna, if we have any hair, it stands on end. Or we're always meditating, seeing the form of Krishna, Shyama Sundaram, Achintya, Guna, Swarupam, with his unlimited beautiful qualities within our heart. This is a hope for the future, that we might get a little glimpse of what this is all about, so that even a little bit of a higher taste will at least inspire us to go on, and in spite of whatever ups and downs we may have in the material world, we'll remember that higher taste that we experience and try to come back to that taste again. Be able to sacrifice something so that we become eligible to receive another taste of that happiness we got from serving Krishna with sincerity. Therefore, we should at least get some theoretical knowledge that there's such a thing as transcendental happiness, and hopefully we've all tasted it, and therefore that transcendental happiness will inspire us to go on with the process, in spite of the fact, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna consciousness will not always be all happiness. There has to be some happiness, otherwise we won't go on, but we can't expect to have happiness all the time. So what does that Krishna say? Sukham tvidanu tvividam shinumai bhartarshva. Yat tat sattva, yat tat agre vishamiva parim nami ritopama tat sukham satikam proktam atma buddhi prasarajam tat agre chanubande cha sukham atmanam atmanaha. So yat agre, that at the beginning it's like bitter like poison. Yad agre, ishayad. Yad tat agre vishamiva. Okay. Yad tat agre vishamiva. That which in the beginning may be like poison. Tat agre yad agre tat vishamiva. Pariname Ritopamam. But at the end it's just like nectar. Tat sukham sabhikam prokdam. It's said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. Tat agre, yat agre, yat agre, tat vishamiva parinami ritopamam. Tat sukham sattvikam prokdam atma buddhi prasadam tvam. So that it becomes like prasad, actually transcendental nectar. Just like everyone has, anyone who's ever done any book distribution has the experience, when you go out there, everyone doesn't look like they're coming from Vaikuntha. Sometimes people may look like, if you approach them, they might stop and devour you right on the spot. But when one overcomes one's fear and reluctancy and starts becoming a little enthusiastic, then you start seeing that people are pretty much like we are. Everyone is more or less the same. They're all an anxiety. And if someone is actually has the enthusiasm to stop them on the street, they actually respect it, most people, because they would never do any such thing. They can't imagine going up to a stranger on the street and trying to stop them. Unless they were trying to rob them of something. Sometimes people think like that, trying to steal something from them. But most people respect and actually, some people are quite happy that someone paid attention to them. People wear shirts like this, 1, 2, 3, whatever. Everyone has a t-shirt on, trying to advertise, I'm part of this group, I'm part of this community. And you say, wow, look at that shirt. And they go, yeah. Finally, someone here is part of my club, part of my clan. Yeah, all right, we're together, man. we against the world. And people really appreciate that. So, it's bitter at first to going out and try to approach. What's bitter is not the people are not bitter usually. It's our mind that's bitter. All the speculation that we're going through. What these people are like, what's going on here. That these people don't like me and I don't like them. It's cold out here. I'm suffering. I'm suffering for these people and they don't believe it. I've given my life to the Hare Krishna movement. And these people don't appreciate my sacrifice. But when one becomes a little enthusiastic and one actually starts reciprocating with people, then one actually sees how nice it is that this is the best. I'm actually developing nice relationships even with people I don't know. I can't develop a nice relationship with people I know. But in this situation, I'm developing nice relationships with people I don't even know. Hopefully I don't get to know them too much, because so it's that type of enthusiasm can also be manifested even in our relationships, even in the temple. It's possible if we just develop a proper vision, the proper enthusiasm, and take it as a service. Of course, it's clear that we're trying to sell people a book, and we know we have to be nice to them. You can't sell people a book unless they agree to take it, unless you threaten them or something, or you cheat them. But you have to be nice to them. And on that basis, then they take the book, because you encourage them, you got their interest or something. So the same thing can happen in a relationship with anyone. If we get the intelligence coming from Krishna, we can, instead of having an antagonistic relationship with people, we can have a nice relationship. We can see Krishna in their hearts. Everyone, and all the time. That's why Srila Prabhupada was so expert, that he was able to relate to everyone, practically speaking, at least from the point of view, from his point of view, he was trying to help them become Krishna conscious. And therefore Krishna gave him the spiritual potency in order to do that. Not everyone could understand that, but most people could appreciate it. that here was someone who's actually trying to help me. And therefore, Prabhupada is glorified, not because he was expert in so many things, which he was, but because he was expert in his relationships with people. Otherwise, why would you can be the best singer, the best dancer, the best athlete, but if you're nasty to people, people won't appreciate it. And you may be the most insignificant person, but if you're nice to people, everyone appreciates it. If you're a beggar on the street and someone comes up to you and asks you for some part of your food and you give it to him, then he becomes glorified as the most generous person. More generous than a multimillionaire or billionaire who gives you, you know, 100 euros or something, but no big thing for him because he doesn't even notice the difference. But if a beggar on the street gives you something, he's making a big sacrifice, and he becomes more glorified than even the most so-called most generous person. Then his real humanity is shown. So here, Rantideva was glorified, although he was a very opulent personality, but because he gave everything, even at the great sacrifice. And therefore Krishna arranged it so that his devotee can be glorified like that. Although we can understand probably the person who was even more glorifiable were his family, because they may not have been so advanced as he was, but they wound up starving too. But they certainly got the benefit of having such a great personality as the head of their family, although they may not have appreciated it at the time. It's one thing if you want to fast, but if your father or your husband decides that he's going to make you fast, that may be a little bit more difficult to tolerate. But anyhow, we can understand taking birth in such a family as Rantideva was not an ordinary birth, and therefore there were undoubtedly exalted personalities too. So we should try to be a little generous in whatever way we can, with our time at least, with our energy, so that we try to help people, especially even more important than giving them food, of course prasadam is important, is to give them an opportunity to learn how to revive their relation with Krishna. If they get their relation with Krishna, then that's the most generous thing we can give them. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Just a comment. On book distribution, when I'm doing the books, so I meet so many young people, young students actually, and I realized it. Actually, they're very nice because they're just in ignorance, we can say. But they're nice because, for example, somebody like a few of the girls, they took the book from me. And they are like, they are passing from that street almost every day. So sometimes they come and ask me, like, oh, I see you every day. Do you want something? Can I get you a coffee or a burger? Of course, I don't take it. But and I just say, no, thank you, you know. Like, but the desire, you know, they have, and you know, that they're being nice, was very nice.
Yes.
And also someone else also asked the same thing. Oh, you know, I have these pancakes, you know, can I get you these pancakes? I was like, I'm good, thank you, you know. But they're nice people, but they're just in ignorance. And also, like you said, that we should be nice to people, you know, and relationships are very important. When I'm approaching them, and like they took the book, and I know still some of the students there, I meet them every day almost, and they come to me and they actually talk, like, how are you? How was your Christmas? I was like, yeah, how are you? You know, and we talk for like a few minutes, you know, and they said we will come to the to your center, yoga center, in next month. So I also try to keep nice relationships with them. So I try not to just have a relationship of, or you take the book and you give the money and buy. No.
Well, they're also, we're eternally related to each other.
Yeah.
This eternal relationship. It's nice to give some of their, if someone's really interested, you can get their telephone number and call them up and invite them.
Yeah, they are. I've added them on social media, which I have. I mean, some of them said, I asked them for phone numbers. Some of them said that they don't want regular messages or, you know, notifications. So I've added them on my social media. And actually, this morning I received a message from the girl I met on the who took the book. She said, "Hey, I couldn't come last time, but I hope that I can. I hope the center is still open for me, and I can come in January." So I have to reply her.
Yes, okay. Tell her it's about to close, but we'll keep it open for her. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the lecture. As we're coming to an end slowly of this ninth canto, and I'm also in my personal reading coming to an end of the ninth canto, I was wondering if I should read the tenth canto after it, or should I wait? Or?
Yeah, you can even read the 11th and the 12th after that.
Okay.
Then you can go back to the first, okay. Unless you can find the 13th.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Grandharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.